I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody, and welcome to Talk to the Audience, where this is always death. I am one of your hosts, Bob Mackie, the man who could not be canceled by HBO Max, and who is here with me today.
Hey, it's Henry Gilbert. I sadly was the co-star of that upcoming Batgirl film, but you're never going to see it.
So you're hanging out with Michael Keaton on the set.
He was what a fun guy.
I hear he's very nice. Yeah, well, we'll never see that footage. Anyhow, welcome to our community podcast. This post at the end of the month on Patreon, the beginning of the month on the free feed, and what we do on this podcast is talk about what's happening in the Simpsons world and what's happening in our world. And then we respond to questions and comments from the recent round of episodes. And it is a slow news month this month.
Yeah, no.
No episodes are airing and no new products are being revealed.
No, yeah, they didn't. We're in between conventions. You know, San Diego Comic-Con was last month in July. And then next month, September is when the new season premieres, or late September, I think. So, yeah, this. But there certainly was a lot of non-Simpsons related animation news for us to get into a little bit here. But yeah, as far as Simpsons, mainly just a tease of something in the future was the biggest news this month. But,
that's true.
Yeah.
So let's start with semi-good news. We can work our way to the bad news, because nothing happening in the world of Simpsons. A lot has been happening in the world of animation. None of it good. So yes, believe it or not, folks, a new short is coming September 8th, which means we're going to just miss this on this episode. We'll cover it next episode, but it's going to be called Welcome to the Club. And what's this about, Henry?
You know, at the at press time, they've only teased the concept of it. They have not even put out images of it. But the next Simpsons Disney Plus short, Welcome to the Club, apparently centers around Lisa, and it's about her wanting to be a Disney princess, but then she is pulled over to the dark side, and it might be more fun to be bad, she thinks. So it sounds like one where it will be built around the, you know, is Lisa a Disney princess comedy, but then veer off into her hanging out with like Maleficent and Cruella de Vil, I would assume.
I can just see the jokes. See them all in front of me, folks. But hey, I'm glad it's not promoting a specific thing. It's just promoting the brand. Maybe it'll be funny. I'm not a big fan of these shorts. And if you've been listening, you know that.
Yeah.
I respect the work that went into them, but I wish they weren't just like promotional objects.
Yeah. Though again, you know, I always remind myself that it could be worse. It could be that Trump era stuff of them trying to be funny in that way. I'd rather commercials for Disney Plus properties than Donald Trump small hands orange man jokes.
It's a blessing that we get these instead.
And this of course is time for everybody's favorite time of the year, Disney Plus Day, when all the fun new stuff comes out on Disney Plus.
Would you be at Disney during Disney Plus Day?
Well, yes, this actually, I guess this is...
Wait, are you going for Disney Plus Day?
No, they're doing Disney Plus Day around... Okay. Listeners, I must admit, my husband and I, we're going to D23. He's always wanted to go. It is like a Comic-Con for Disney fandom run by Disney. I know, but there will be a Simpsons panel at it, and I hope to attend that panel, and maybe there'll be some fun stuff there, and maybe if I see Carolyn Omine on stage, I can wave at her and be like, hey, we've DM'd each other occasionally. How's it going? It is also time for, I actually will be flying to Anaheim the day that this comes out.
You can watch it on the plane.
I'll download it on my Disney Plus app and watch it over and over.
And celebrating your 40th birthday.
Yes, I will be 2 days into my 40th year.
Yeah, this is the final talk to the audience of Henry's 30s.
It's true. Yeah, my dirty 30s are going to be over soon. And I have a lot of trips planned around my birthday. I fly to, me and my husband fly to Chicago, see pro wrestling shows, and also take in the Chicago ambiance and culture.
Go to
pizzas.
The Ferris Bueller Museum.
Yeah. I want to actually see the paintings and stuff, but I did Google which museum is a Ferris Bueller Museum to see that.
And you're going
to
put the Smiths on Spotify and they'll say, sir, please leave. Yeah, you're the fifth person to do this today.
The Smiths are canceled, don't you know?
You're right.
Yeah. Well,
Morrissey.
Morrissey.
And
is.
He counts.
But yeah, and then get back here. Me and Bob are recording a podcast together, and I'm getting some dental work, and then straight straight to D23 for a weekend in Anaheim. And but yeah, so anyway, welcome to the club, among many other things. But that is the Simpsons thing coming to Disney Plus on September 8th, just in time for me to be 40.
And just a little bit of news about season 34, which is just around the bend here. Mm-hmm. Matt Selman teased one episode. He says he calls it a crazy conceptual episode that explains how the Simpsons know the future. Lots of crazy stuff in it, and it's coming in season 34. So it should be riffing on the Simpsons predicted it memes, which, by the way, was the concept for our canceled Sketchfest show. It was canceled because of COVID. Everything was canceled.
Yeah, yeah. It was our mistake doing a show in a city that cared more about COVID than other cities back in January. Now, you go to San Francisco, literally everything is open. Nobody cares. Even there, they don't care if you wear a mask. Like, well, no, this is skipping ahead, but we went to a place that cared about masks.
Because it was full of culture and puppets.
Yeah, but yeah, Selman, it's a cool deadline interview in general, the Matt Selman interview, because I think Selman's really getting out there as showrunner in articles like this, which is cool. Like,
he's usurping Gene.
I do think Gene's scaling it back. I think this is like his sunsetting retirement here into being, you know, my long suggested idea that he could end up just being the, you know, James L. Brooks, not much older than them even. Maybe this lets Gene become the Brooks while Brooks, you know, enjoys being a trillionaire on some island somewhere.
Enjoys retirement.
But yeah, read the Selman article too, because he is very nice about sharing credit on stuff, like how the Emmy-nominated episode, the Naked and Afraid parody one, he says, like, you know, if it wins, the quality is because of Carolyn Omine and as co-showrunner on it and the writer of the episode. He's all about sharing the credit. He seems like a nice guy, that Matt Selman.
He's not nice until he talks to us.
Yep, yeah,
then
not
he
officially
will be
nice.
Declared nice. So our next item here, I will quote Kent Brockman from a future episode. So I guess you could say this barely qualifies as news.
Yes.
But hey, we're desperate for anything to talk about Simpsons news. Some TikTok kid got a Mr. Burns haircut and what might be child abuse. I can't tell yet.
It's the headline, Mom Let Son Get Mr. Burns Haircut. And so, yes, a 10-year-old boy shaved his head into the Mr. Burns style, left the sides on, and then did the excellent thing. Let's, you know what, I'll play it so listeners can judge for themselves how good this boy's impression is.
Smithers.
That's it.
Wow.
Yeah, he said, hey, it's a TikTok, you know, and it's up to 7.4 million views.
As a former weird kid, now weird adult, I appreciate how weird this kid is. Like, this kid born in like 2013 is a yes. Mr. Burns fan.
I know, yeah. It's I think that shows you that Bill Oakley had said to us he worried that The Simpsons for a time not being on digital areas was making it so kids didn't know what Simpsons were. I hate to say a compliment too much to our corporate overlords of Disney Plus, but I do think it's caused more kids to know what The Simpsons are and actually give a shit about them. It's kind of nice.
Yeah, yeah. When they're done with Bob's Burgers, the show they prefer.
Yes, yeah. Then, you know, it's just like, sadly, it's the exact amount of time of 30 years. Like, it's like me and you as children in the 90s getting into Rocky and Bullwinkle, you know, except Rocky and Bullwinkle. It's like if Rocky and Bullwinkle never stopped having new episodes for 30 years.
Yeah. Somehow, Bill Scott? Is that the guy's name?
Yes, and Bill Scott, yeah.
He remained alive.
Dan Castellaneta took better care of himself than all the men who worked. Well, Stan Freberg lasted a while.
June Foray lasted a while.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think if any of the Simpsons actors live as long as June Foray, well, I'll be very happy.
I'm looking at this TikTok account, by the way. It's pink_nade, N-A-D-E. Mm. All of the TikToks have like a few thousand, not bad. The one of her kid is like 7.4 million. Mm-hmm. So if you want social media attention, have a kid and make it weird.
Yeah, make it weird. Shave their head.
It feels like one of those things where it's like, okay, you can have the fun haircut, then we shave the rest of it off.
Yeah.
You got to go to church.
I would assume this was just like one evening of a full head shave. And she's like, you know, how back in the day, a friend friend might shave their mustache off, but in the middle they have funny mustaches, and then other ones in photos they regret that they thought was a funny mustache.
This is a wholesome use of TikTok, a very evil platform that's killing people and making their and warping their brains. So there you have it. And this is the big news item, not Simpsons related, but it's about animation. We we cover animation. The axes are falling at HBO Max. And lots of things are not only being canceled in production, but being removed. And not just being a move, but removed, but also erased from history.
Yep, yeah.
It's a real Stalin-style tactics from, is it Alan Zaslav?
David Zaslav.
David Zaslav. Yeah. I think there's like an animation writer called Alan Zaslav. Yeah, David Zaslav. Who is this conspiracy theory? Like, he's a Trump guy, and he's like also trying to get rid of like left-leaning things to focus on a more middle American programming style. Is that a conspiracy theory?
I've heard that conspiracy. Okay. I bet it's not entirely unfounded, because certainly the Discovery Channel, the Team Discovery Channel. Bob had a great tweet, guys, about the Team Discovery Channel. That Martin was right.
We all laughed at that. It turned out to be the most powerful team imaginable.
But yeah, all the shit that's on Discovery Channel and True TV and all that, it is middle America aimed stuff, and it certainly is not cartoons about gay space rocks kissing each other. Like, they're not. They that's not the kind of stuff he greenlit, and so. Yeah, I do think there is a, I bet there is a slight political reasoning to what he cuts or not, but also it is like the lowest common denominator style stuff too. Like, it just is, which is, and the cheapest thing you can do, like Discovery Channel, this guy, especially, you can search David Zaslav. He's the guy who spearheaded Honey Boo Boo, like that, like the shittiest of shit.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Which.
Well, you know what? The incest elf show did not get canceled. Game of Thrones.
Oh,
thing.
Yes. Yeah.
You know
what?
I saw. It's okay if you watched. I saw people responding to it. They were all tweeting like they just took medicine. Like, I guess it tasted fine. I don't know.
Yeah, I can't. I barely watch Game of Thrones. I watched a bit of season one and then came in with the final season because my husband had watched it all, and he's like, let's watch the final season together. And I just constantly was saying, like, this show's supposed to be well written, right? Like, what the hell is this shit? And I can't believe people come back after that to want to watch a prequel show. As much as I like Matt Smith, and Matt Smith's a good actor, I like seeing him and stuff.
Well, people came back to Star Wars after its 2019 fumble.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, I guess
this feels no different than that, honestly.
I suppose this could. They're hoping it'll be the Mandalorian of the Song of Ice and Fire. But
yeah, all of these things, you know, in production getting canceled, also getting removed. Then we're learning about the Batman is going to be just dissolved in acid.
That's insane. Yeah,
yeah. They're having a funeral screening basically for people in the industry. That's what they're calling it.
Yeah,
and it's like,
yeah,
after this, then we just set the negatives on fire.
Yeah.
To me, regardless of how frivolous a Batman movie is, that's destroying art. Like, that is evil.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like Nazi shit. We're tiptoeing towards that line.
Yeah, I mean, if that Batgirl movie might not be good, I don't know, maybe, but I mean, if it's already done, just put that shit out. But I guess, so, you know, the Batgirl live action movie, it was supposed to be in this middle road thing, like was supposed to look better than the, you know, CW Flash shows. But I mean, not Flash animation. I mean, like the series, The Flash. But it was not supposed to be as high level as, you know, as The Batman, that movie, Robert Pattinson movie that was just out. But it ended up costing like $90 million. And I think the feeling was like, it's too much of a boy for, it's too crazy for Boys Town, too much of a boy for Crazy Town. Kind of middle ground. They didn't know what to do with it. And then unfortunately, thanks to the horrors of the American tax code, they could, as long as it's never seen by anybody and it gets no profit ever, if they just kill it, they can write off that money on their taxes, and they make way more money not releasing it than releasing it, unfortunately.
This is interesting to me personally, because I was in an industry where, yes, I was laid off for tax reasons. And also all of my work was deleted because it was cheaper that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, in that industry, I was like, oh, in real show businesses, that would never happen. But apparently it can happen.
Yeah.
No one is safe.
No, it's crazy. Like, this happened to some of our best bros out there. Like, Ian Jones Cordy was tweeting about it, how his show OKKO is now, it's still on Hulu, but it's not on HBO Max anymore. And not only that, but promotional videos and clips that were put on YouTube official YouTube channels. They're being erased. And it could just be as simple as up top somebody says, well, we can't advertise things that aren't on HBO Max anymore. Delete those videos. But Ian Jones-Quartey, like, and others, had no heads up on this. They got to learn in the news, like us, which is so disrespectful to creators. But, and you know, the scuttlebutt behind the scenes was that Cartoon Network executives in the middle of this, they said, please, give us till Monday. Let us tell our creators so they don't learn it in the news. And Discovery's like, no, we got to cut this shit Friday, right now. It's got to get off HBO Max tomorrow morning. And they just slashed. And yeah, I mean, if you want an interesting guide to what it's like behind the scenes on it too, friend of the show and previous podcast guest / creator of Infinity Train, Owen Dennis, talked all about this in a Substack newsletter he wrote. Mm. So check that out too. But yeah, that isn't it crazy that the Bruce Tim Batman thing, they're like, nah, let's see. Like, apparently he's being shopped around to other places. And you would think, like, Netflix or whatever will pay money to host it because it's a big name thing. But why would you not want, like, that's as mainstream as it gets. It's a Batman cartoon.
Yeah, by the people who made the best one.
Yeah.
And I have to say, Henry, you have to stop talking about this Venture Brothers movie because they're going to notice they still have it.
I know.
I've seen you tweet about it like 3 or 4 times. Like, will they cancel this? Well, they will if you keep talking about it.
Okay.
You have to stop talking about it.
Well, the hopeful note I have on the Venture Brothers thing is they did something a month ago. They showed a trailer for that Aqua Teen movie that got greenlit at the same time, which unsurprisingly is getting finished before the Venture Brothers movie because it's way faster to make an Aqua Teen thing.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
If that's still coming out, it would lead one to hope that Venture Brothers and also the Metalocalypse film will stay going. And, you know, also they weren't, I think another thing that might save them is that they weren't announced as HBO Max originals. They were announced as things that will be sold on Blu-ray that will then go to HBO Max. So that might give it multiple profit centers. But yeah, like other shows got killed. Like there was this cool looking show called Driftwood. It was like a 90-minute basically movie for HBO Max, animated movie being made by a lot of folks who worked on Steven Universe Future and other shows I really love. And that it just got canceled. Like they announced it 2 months ago. I now look back on that as them showing they knew that the Discovery was coming in to kill a bunch of shit. And they decided like, oh, okay, then we have to announce this before. And maybe then it won't be killed because it's been announced. Nope, not the case. Like, yeah.
Well, we're not getting the Stephen Urkel Christmas special this year.
That's right.
We're not getting Did I Do That to the Holidays. I was so looking forward to that.
They canceled so much. Yeah. It's crazy. And all these shows just gone. I mean, and then another sad bit of it is like you can't get physical media for some of these things. Like Infinity Train never got a DVD release. OKKO never really got. You can buy some random episodes on DVD. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
And not to go over everything they canceled, but some things I forgot were in production, like a new Looney Tunes movie and a Looney Tunes musical movie.
Right, right.
In the style of the revival shorts. That was canceled as well.
Yeah, man, there was just so much. Yeah, and there was also like a Gumball movie, which like Gumball's popular. Why would they kill this Gumball thing? That's nuts. But I mean, a silver lining to this, I don't want to celebrate anything related to this, but silver lining, I think this shows that Warner Discovery is divesting themselves of J.J. Abrams, who they should not have hired to that. I mean, I know people also are saying, like, you know, if they're getting rid of J.J. Abrams, I guess too with that conspiracy that they're trying to be more centrist, I feel like that Black Superman movie is not going to happen now. I don't think the Michael B. Jordan Superman movie.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening.
Yes, again, conspiracy theory. But I've read a little about this guy, and I don't like him.
No, he's every executive's awful, for sure. And, you know,
he's also like a big flesh golem like Bob Chapek.
Yes, yeah.
He's like a big pink-like monster.
He could at least be a hot zaddy like the guy who took over for Chapek in charge of the parks. I'm stealing a joke from our PTR friends. But, but yeah, it's I mean, the Zaslav guy looks like a horrible human being who, again, I think that it this is all done also to fuck people out of, like, even small payments and, you know, obviously animation writers who are not writing under WGA, but instead under the Animation Guild, they don't get residuals anyway. but this screws SAG people out of residuals, some money residuals, like, and it's just like, wow, this is what our friend Lindsay Kaitai, who congrats to her and Mike Carlson with their new baby. Mm-hmm. But and I feel bad for her that all this was happening as she was having a baby. But she, who wrote for Lindsay Kaitai, wrote for Infinity Train. She talked about like this, the amount of tiny residuals on these cartoons has to amount to like nothing, like no money, like how is this saving money?
It does seem like it's done out of spite. Like, yeah. Let's delete 200 Sesame Streets. Like, what? Why?
Make everything. And I mean, you know, now before already is like Adult Swim is 100 episodes of Rick and Morty, and the only green light shows that look like Rick and Morty. And I feel like it's only going to get worse.
Yes. Yeah. It's not looking good for the future of entertainment, except for podcasting. Yeah. Everything is just fine. We can assure you. So let's talk about what's happening in our neck of the woods. And by that, I mean, let's talk about our schedule for September. So our What a Cartoon episode for September will be Garfield and Friends. Yes. I think it's our fourth time covering Garfield mm-hmm. in animated form. Is it four? I think it's four.
Yeah, this will be the fourth.
Okay.
Yeah,
we've done Christmas, Halloween, Thanksgiving, and now Garfield and Friends.
Yes.
And the episode has like five things in it, so there's not just one name. Henry, what are all the segments in that episode?
So this is the sixth episode of the third season, but it is specifically, or the 45th total episode. The three main segments are Binky Gets Canceled Again, Orson's Diner, and Flat Tired. Those are the three shorts, and it's again the sixth episode by most episode guide counts, the sixth episode of season three.
And very easy to find on archive.org.
Yes, yeah. I mean, you could also, there's other official places. Check Tubi, though episode counts are different on all of those like things. Like some are like have a few episodes, some have every episode, and there's some DVDs out there. But listen to that podcast and you'll hear my warning to not buy any of the recent DVDs of Garfield and Friends and only buy the old ones.
They redid that intro.
They redid a lot of things. It's bad. But this episode is good.
It's a lot of fun.
Yes.
And our What a Cartoon movie for August will be Beavis and Butthead Do the Universe, the mm-hmm. 2022 Paramount Plus movie. We did an entire summer of Disney Renaissance. Let's wash that taste out of our mouths with some filth.
some recent filth, too.
Some TV-14 filth. A very, very funny movie. We're really into the new reboot series, and the movie is great too. We can't wait to talk about that. And again, if you're on the $5 level or the free level, you can hear the extended free preview. But if you want to hear the whole thing, you have to be at the $10 level at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. As for what we're doing in October for What a Cartoon Movie, there is going to be another of our famous yes-no polls. this one is going to be for The Transformers, the movie, 1986. I think the definitive only thing you should ever look at when it comes to Transformers of that era.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, if you're going to watch anything, you know, there's some all right episodes of the show. I'd rather watch episodes of Transformers than He-Man from that same era, but yeah, it's as far as toy commercial things go, Transformers the movie is like the best thing. I love it. It is amazing to look at. They just put out a fantastic 4K re-release of it that actually has it at the correct aspect ratio.
Ooh,
which
finally
is square. It was animated square and then it cropped for theaters to make it widescreen. But yeah, it's, and it also is connected to The Simpsons in a way too. And it's like, oh, what, we're going to do just some crappy episode of the regular season and then do the movie? Like, no, let's cut straight to the movie. We did Beast Wars. Now let's talk about classic Transformers at its best, which is the movie, which I, as a child, watched 8 million times.
I don't think I've watched it ever.
Oh, wow, boy.
So I'm in for a treat.
I've seen it on the big screen at Castro Theater in 35 millimeter.
That seems almost too good for that movie. But I'm sure the animation's very nice.
It is.
And we have a special programming note for Talking Simpsons. So the first week of September, you're not going to get a standard Talking Simpsons episode. Instead, you're going to get two new things, and then we'll go back to our normal schedule. So what you're going to be getting is two interviews that week with superstars from the world of TV animation. We did two interviews. We didn't just want to give them away for free, so we're using them to buy ourselves a week off, in quotes, even though I don't know what it's called. You know, all the podcasters are taking the summer off now.
Yeah,
what's going on there?
I can see this. Man, we at least done, you know, it's my birthday, it's Labor Day. We'll take it off to the degree that you will still get 2 hours of content, except it will be talking with two folks who have a lot to do with either The Simpsons and or Futurama, not to mention way more beyond
Yes, very good interviews, very eye-opening interviews, and they will be the first week if you're on the Patreon and the second week of September if you're on the free feed. And again, we'll be back to our normal schedule right after that, so don't jump through a window.
it'll be fun. You'll learn so much stuff, folks. I think you guys will enjoy, and it also, you know, will get you ready for future podcasts we're doing down the line too. So and we seriously did learn a ton from those interviews. Like, it was really eye-opening for me and Bob,
and you will too. As for personal stuff, what's going on in our lives, what we're playing and watching, not necessarily for podcasting, very busy month for me. I'm sandwiched between two trips because I got back from Canada to see my wife. 3 weeks pass. I go to PAX. By the way, I'm going to have a PAX panel. I'll tell you more about that very soon. So if you're listening to this on the Patreon feed, I think you can still catch me very soon. I think if you're on the free feed, you might have just missed me. So yeah, super busy month. It's just like 3 weeks of solid work because I have, like Henry, I have two trips coming up. I've got a PAX trip and then another trip to Canada. And in the middle, I'm back here to record with Henry and also get dental work. So we're having fun with the dentist lately, folks.
Yeah, we're living very similar lives this month.
It's called becoming old, and your bones start getting aged.
Even those bones in your mouth, they get the most aged of all.
But I did play a few games, despite being busy. Right before I left, I took like 7 months off from playing this game, but I was like, oh, I'm almost at the end. I should beat it. I finished Batman Arkham Origins, which I started for blabbing about Batman. I wanted to play a Batman game. And the ending is kind of bad, and there's never a good final. The bosses in this game aren't very good, but I did enjoy the entire experience, and I think it's unfairly discounted. I feel like it almost reaches the heights of Arkham City, and I've heard Arkham Knight is a worse game.
I think it is. I think it's too overstuffed with things, and the story's too big, and also it has a twist that was, at least to a hardcore Batman fan, was too obvious, and then they did the J.J. Abrams thing of going like, no, it's not the twist you think. Then you play the game's like, it is a twist, I thought. You guys, and on top of that, the Batmobile sucks.
It lost
not
its wheel,
fun,
I've heard.
But Arkham Origins, I remember really loving it. I think it also got a bad rap because it was the B team of actors. Like, it didn't get the real guys.
And it's not by Rocksteady.
And
they don't include it in those, like, compilations. But, you know, it's always, like, $9 or less. Yeah. It's easy to play and find. If you want to play a 10-year-old game.
Now, you know, people right now are cautiously looking forward to that October release of Gotham Knights, the next Arkham game, which is made by the Arkham Origins people.
Did that get delayed even more?
It did. No, Suicide Squad got delayed, but they just showed it at Gamescom, and it still is said to be October. I wouldn't put it past them to also just say, because literally every game has decided they're not coming out this fall. They're like, nah, we're not doing it. It'll just be, all you're going to play this fall is Call of Duty or God of War Ragnarok. That's
not
two
me.
Things.
Splatoon 3 and Bayonetta 3.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Okay. On Nintendo, they're not running scared of God of War Ragnarok.
No. Yeah. I finished that. I started the indie RPG Eastward on the Switch. It's sort of like an Earthbound-like, a very, very gorgeous sprite art.
Ooh.
It's super talky. I don't know if I really like it yet, although I am 10 hours in, so I'm still playing it.
Must mean something, yeah.
And I have time in my life maybe twice a decade for a Musou game, a Dynasty Warriors game. The last one I played was Dragon Quest Heroes.
That's a goodie.
And that, I think, was almost 7 years ago. I think that was a 2015 or 2016 game.
I think I was working at a certain website, old website job when that came out, yeah.
So because it was on sale and I had the itch to play another one of these, I picked up Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity. And I thought it was the other Hyrule Warriors game. I forgot there were two on the Switch.
I forgot that also.
Yeah. This is the one that came out like during the pandemic. It was November of 2020. And it was the perfect game for me to accidentally buy because it is a prequel to Breath of the Wild. It's basically, what if we went back in time to before the apocalypse happened and prevented it? So you get to hang out in that world before it collapsed. And it's like an alternate timeline thing. It's really cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Although it does run like absolute ass. My Kingdom for a Switch 2. It's 23 FPS on a good day.
The system's almost 6 years old. They really should just get a Switch 2, yeah.
But yeah, if you like those kind of games, Nintendo had oversight. There's like all this extra stuff that you normally can't do in these games, like crafting, and they work in a lot of Breath of the Wild elements. It's like, I was really hoping they'd announce Breath of the Wild 2 because I played 120 hours of that game this this year, the first one, and I finished it for the first time. And so, yeah, this is the perfect game for me right now.
Yeah, I think Koei Tecmo is at their best when a publisher makes them try a little harder, you know, and that definitely, that extends to Hyrule Warriors and also the Dragon Quest Heroes games. You know, the last... it's not really a Musou game, but the Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3 they made with the Musou team at Koei Tecmo.
But that's Diablo-like or something?
Diablo-ish, like, yeah. But it is like waves and waves. It's more of an action dungeon crawler, yes. But that was pretty good and done by the same folks.
And I have to let people know, I rarely play games on my phone. But I have Apple Arcade because I got a new phone and it came with like a year of it. So I've been looking into that. And if you like Hot Shots Golf, if you like Mario Golf... There's a very good golf game. It's called Clap Hands Golf, H-A-N-Z, because Clap Hands is the developer that took over for Camelot after the first Hot Shots Golf game. And they've made every Hot Shots Golf since then. They made it was retitled to Everybody's Golf on the PS4. That was a really good golf game.
Yeah, because that's what it's called in Japan, right?
Yeah, like Mina no Golf. Yeah.
See, one of the five Japanese words we know.
Like, Mina.
Mina no Fushigi no Densetsu.
Yes, Yume.
Yeah.
but yes, it is essentially like that precise of a golf game, but with very good phone controls.
Ooh.
With all the options and like everything you want from the Hot Shots Golf experience. Like the core experience has never really changed. It's just gotten like prettier and like more user friendly, and it's a very good version of that. I was surprised by how much content there is in this iPhone version of Clap Hands Golf. It's got a very bad title because it's named after the developer.
You know, maybe I'll give that a shot because I did play that most recent Mario Golf game a good deal. I remember when the Clap Hands took over, and I always preferred Camelot style to Clap Hands. There's just little differences, but if you're telling me this game is like that, do you do click, click, click to, oh man, then that's...
It's all about stopping a meter 3 to 5 times per hole.
Something about hearing that click just is like, it satisfies me so much. Yeah.
It's perfect for a touchscreen too. Yeah, actually, I bought that Mario Golf game. I was too depressed to play it.
Oh, that's sad.
It came out in June 2020.
I get it. I played about a dozen hours, and then I just seriously got to a stupid challenge hole, of course. I was like, I just can't goddamn do this stupid challenge. I'm done with this. And I stepped away from it, but I had a fine little time with it.
And also, I want to play more Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak this month, but too busy. I just like, that's why I picked up Hyrule Warriors, because I'm very busy and it's just fun to kill waves of things at the end of a day without really thinking about it. But I want to play more of that next month. And I just downloaded the Splatoon 3 free trial for the Splatfest this weekend as of this recording, and I'm really excited for that game in September. I'm so psyched for Splatoon 3.
That's cool.
As for watching stuff, a lot. I'll try to skim through it very fast and highlight the things I really like. So yes, watching more One Piece at the gym. I'm now onto the Enies Lobby arc. That's the last arc I read in the manga. So my plan now is to start the manga from the beginning, because it's been about 5 years.
Whoa.
And read up to and past that part before I get to the end of that arc in the anime. And
wow.
I might be able to do it because I have a lot of plane rides coming up.
I guess you can do it on that Shonen Jump app pretty easy, right?
I already bought it all before that.
Okay.
which was my mistake.
All right. Well, that's how I have been reading it. I mean, I bought a physical collection of the first 10 books, and then he announced that Shonen Jump app. I was like, well, I guess I'll just read it this way. Yeah.
I spent like $400 on the manga digitally before the app came out. So yeah.
I did similar for Dragon Ball as well, and then the app came out. So I feel your pain.
So I watched a lot of movies, and I don't want to bore everybody with the entire list, because my wife and I watch a lot of movies when we're together in Canada. I'll skim through it really quick. I watched The Thing in theaters. Lucky enough to see it twice in theaters in my life.
Nice.
I saw a 40th anniversary screening. Yes, it still rules. I saw also Howl's Moving Castle in theaters. I had not seen that movie in 17 years, and I think this is the first time I understood what it was about. After 20 years had passed. It's about helping a wizard dodge the draft.
Yeah, that's right. He was told, like, you have to help bomb Iraq, basically. Like, and he's like, no, I don't want to bomb
exactly.
Iraq. This fucks me up. Yeah.
I did like it more this time.
Well, and also, like, he's a fuckboy who's taught to clean up his apartment.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And what I learned from Letterboxd reviews is that, I mean, every guy does this, and I'm guilty of it too. It's like, this thing gave me a boner when I was little. You got to hear about it. Women are doing this with Howl's Moving Castle. Like, oh, when Howl said, "That's my girl, clean up an aisle me." That's what they're saying on Letterboxd.
Wow,
yeah.
Man, I didn't realize
so that. It's refreshing to hear that from women. Every guy's going to be like, oh, when I sell Elvira, turkey's done, you know, basically.
That's funny, you know, because I remember when that came out, I haven't seen it. I saw it in theaters new when it like played here in Berkeley. I remember it at now defunct theater. And I remember Hayao Miyazaki in interviews was talking about how like this, he considered Howl the first like Bishonen guy he'd done. Like he'd never, all of his dudes who were leads are like workaday boys. Like I'm a hardworking boy, like Conan or Patsu. But Howl is a pretty boy. Like, he's a skinny, pretty boy. He's a fancy lad. Yeah.
Yeah, it was good. And again, it was nice to see that female perspective on Howl, which I was completely unaware of. Mm-hmm. Now I'm seeing it everywhere. Every woman is horny for Howl.
When that towel slips off of Howl.
Oh, yeah.
Some people entered their womanhood.
It's true. I saw The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
That's a great movie. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know it was, like, basically the Western version of Tales from the Crypt, where it's, like, every story has like a twist ending and they're all about death. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this is really cool. Why did nobody tell me? Also, this could have just been like 5 episodes. It could have been better that way.
Yeah, I don't know why. I wonder if they tried to sell it, if Netflix tried to sell it to the Coens as, can we just make this like 5 episodes of a TV show? And the Coens said, no, it's a movie. Like, but yeah, I'm still really it's the opening and ending ones that haunt me the most. And of course there is a canceled man in the middle of it there, but
which
he wasn't canceled
that?
Then James Franco.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
Is he still getting around these days?
I mean, he's not canceled enough. He's in that new Castro movie, apparently. Like, he's going to play Castro, which also it's like, can't you hire an actor who both is Cuban and not canceled? Like one of a million other actors you could hire. Yeah, but yeah, Buster Scruggs. I mean, that last one, The Stagecoach, ooh, mm-hmm. still scares me. Man.
It's very good. Yeah. I liked all of them. Mm-hmm. I also watched The Rocketeer for the second time in my life. Just, I was curious, like, what's this like? Mm-hmm. And it is fun. But it is basically Joe Johnston is like the We Have Steven Spielberg at Home director.
Yes.
Because he directed this, he directed Jurassic Park 3. He makes like Spielberg likes.
Yeah, yeah. Hidalgo and that's why it was perfect. He was the first Captain America director because, like, well, we want a Saving Private Ryan style Captain America movie. He's the senior Spielbergo of that film.
That's
too.
Right. That's right. Yeah. It's interesting and it feels kind of subversive because upon watching this, I'm like, well, he never actually ever gets good at being the Rocketeer. Like, he's fucking up constantly. He can, like, always barely control himself. And then at the end, they're like, so, are you going to be the Rocketeer in the future? He's like, no, I'm going to make out with Jennifer Connelly. Yeah, get away from me.
She's hot as hell,
yeah.
Man. I'm not going to waste my time. Yeah.
So there's no promise of future adventures. It's just like, no, I'm with Jennifer Connelly now. Get away from me. It's over.
As a kid, I was I haven't seen that movie in full since childhood. And
same here. Until now.
I just remember the trailers that make it look like he's Batman. And then as a kid, I was so pissed. He's like, he's in costume, full costume for maybe 4 minutes of that movie, it felt like, in memory.
It's a really cool costume, especially the helmet.
Yeah.
Saw Inglourious Basterds for the first time.
More Nazi adventures.
Yeah, yeah, but this time they die. And I have to wonder what it was like to see this in 2009, thinking, oh, classic movie villains, the Nazis. I love seeing these guys again. They're classic, and now it has a whole different like set of baggage, which is good, I think, where it's I kind of like seeing them die even more than I would have in 2009.
Yeah, no, it's really cool. And it introduced the world to Christoph Waltz for those... They created a role of like, well, we need an actor who can perfectly speak 5 languages. And it's all, the film is just about language, you know, and just translating. And I think my favorite joke in the movie is when the spy looks at the Americans and says, I know this is stupid before I even ask it, but do any of you speak any language other than English? Yeah, a little Italian. Yeah, that's what I figured.
I mean, I saw a bunch of actors in the opening credits. I was like, oh, Paul Rust, what's he going to be like in this movie? He doesn't say anything. He's like in the lineup in the very beginning. And I was like, why did he get a credit up front?
He's there to look Jewish. I think Paul Rust isn't even Jewish. He's like, at least his character makes a joke about that in that love show. Mm. That somebody thinks he's Jewish and he's like, no, I'm not Jewish. I have a nose that looks a certain way, but I'm not Jewish is what his joke is. I'm just repeating his joke. But yeah, I mean, the violence in that is great. Also, the Even in this movie about World War II, it's really about movies. It's always about movies.
The power of filmmaking.
Yes, yeah.
I also saw Nope, so no spoilers here. I didn't really like it.
I haven't seen it yet.
I've liked each of his movies less and less. I loved Get Out. I liked Us, and I just kind of was okay with this one. And I feel like it's built around a few very strong visual ideas, but there's like never any tension. It's far too long. And it just feels kind of listless. Like, I feel like this could have been a great, like, 80-minute movie, but it just really, really drags, and I kind of don't really get it. People, it's a really polarizing movie. Some people really love it. Some people don't like it at all. It's not as a unanimous thumbs up as Get Out was, but I don't think it's bad. I just thought it was pretty disappointing from this director and writer.
Yeah, you know, the middling stuff I've heard about it, too, has not made me rush to see it. I think I proposed it a couple times to my husband. He's like, "Hey, let's wait for streaming. Let's watch it then." Yeah.
Yeah, you're better off. I'm almost done, guys. Let's get through this. Ace in the Hole. Wait till we do Radio Bart. I talk about it then.
Great movie.
And I think my lock of the week is a Mads Mikkelsen movie called Another Round. It's a what country is this from? Denmark.
Yes, I think it's Denmark. Yeah.
Very, very good. Like character drama / black comedy. That is like what I consider one of the very few refreshing looks at drinking and alcohol in movies, where it's not always bad. Sometimes drinking makes people more fun, and we need to celebrate that, because the entire thing is like a bunch of middle-aged men read this study saying like people perform better and are easier to get along with if they have a certain blood alcohol content, and they try this experiment. One guy doesn't work out very well for us. No spoilers there, but the rest of them, it's like the movie says, being drunk is fun.
Wow.
Let's do it. Come on. Okay. And it comes from a culture where the drinking age is 16. So we're not, they're not as,
tied down, prudish,
as Americans.
You know, I'd heard the Sloppy Boys, our pals, the Sloppy Boys podcast. They said it was really good too. I should check it out. Also, it'd be interesting. I've never seen a Mads Mikkelsen movie where he doesn't speak English. It'd be really interesting to see him acting in his native tongue, though.
It is, like I said earlier, this is like an interesting look at drinking. It's not like, oh, the evils of drinking. Look at it, push these people too far. No, it's like drinking is fun, and here's why people do it. And if you don't drink, here's a good thing to watch to let you know this is why people enjoy drinking. And you can drink in moderation and still be an okay person. And some people fucking need to have a drink because they're insufferable. And that's basically all my stuff. And then other stuff we've been doing, and we can talk about this, Henry. We went to the Jim Henson exhibit at the Contemporary Jewish Museum, because Frank Oz is Jewish, by the way. That's how that was their justification. Yes. But hey, we got to see a bunch of puppets.
Yeah, he's a Jewish father, Catholic mother, I believe, who were able to escape the Nazis through a very difficult tale that is told at the museum. So there's a little like Oz box of stuff with his family that it gets real, real. But if you then want to have some colorful fun upstairs, then you get to look at puppets.
Yeah. Hey, there is a Hitler puppet you can look at.
Yes. Yeah. Can't photograph.
No.
Make sure of that. But
I was a good boy. Mm-hmm. I could have photographed the Hitler puppet.
No one was watching.
I know.
Yeah. But that place was great though. Yeah. The Jim Henson exhibit, like it was full of some very well-maintained, because Muppets, who, you know, Muppets fall apart if you don't carefully keep them up to date. It's like, you know, a sweater from 60 years ago isn't going to look so good either. And what if you put a sweater in between your hands for 70 hours in front of bright lights?
You don't want to see the inside of those puppets.
No. But yeah, well, like you get welcomed by Kermit. You get to see like the, God, there was just so much. I mean, to see Wilkins and Woltkins right in front of us, that was so great. And the colors that they were, because they were in black and white in those old commercials.
Everyone was posting pictures, but you can check out mine. My Instagram is Real Bob Servo, and I have a lot of good pictures from that event.
Now, my husband and I love taking a photo with Bert and Ernie. I think that was one of our favorites. Like, that was the closest to crying. I mean, if there was a Gonzo there, I was sad there were no Gonzos, because if I had to pick my favorite Muppet who I identify with the most, it's probably Gonzo, I think. The little weirdo.
Oh, there was no Gonzo. There was no Miss Piggy either, except there were gloves.
We did see Piggy's gloves. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But Bert and Ernie right up there for me, of course.
I also considered it a cautionary tale, walking around and thinking, like, God, Jim Henson was like 10 years older than me.
Right?
So go to the doctor, guys, especially if you're a multimillionaire.
Don't be a Christian scientist about things.
Again, he didn't die of anything major. It was basically like a staph infection that could have easily been treated if he had gone to the doctor earlier.
I mean, too, I guess I don't want to fully blame Christian Science. It also is he was a workaholic who wouldn't stop to go to the doctor.
Yeah, I don't think Christian Science had anything to do with it, honestly. Yeah. I think it was just like he was dying and he didn't want to go to the hospital even after like coughing up blood. His wife basically had to force him to go to the hospital.
His estranged wife.
Yes.
Yeah. No, there, but it was amazing to celebrate his legacy there, but also seeing... You know, when you see Frank Oz, who's still a very vital man, who's, you know, certainly not young, he was only a few years younger than Jim when he died. And like, yeah, it's God, we could have had so much more time with Jim Henson if he taking care of himself. But that was a great afternoon. And then we went to a pizza place with some very bougie old ladies sitting at a table with us. I don't like
They're
that.
They're being very patronizing.
Yes, yeah. But
I should have called them old mummies.
Yeah.
Oh, and yes, if you're going to PAX, and if you're listening to this on the free feed, you already went probably, but I will be doing a Retronauts panel on Sunday the 4th at 2 o'clock p.m. I believe that's in the Sphinx Theater, Sheraton Level 3. All the information is on the Retronauts Twitter account. I'm sure I'll be retweeting it as the panel approaches. But we're talking about the history of video games based on TV shows. It's going to be me, Jeremy, of course, and a friend of the show, Mike Drucker. You've heard him on these podcasts. And
superstar guest.
Yes. And he was on our Talking Simpsons panel at PAX.
Our second to last live show.
2019. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And they didn't accept our one this year.
No, I'm sad about that. Maybe next year. I mean, I'm sure for this being the first full PAX West again, or I guess it's just called PAX, whatever. Anyway,
it's still PAX West.
Okay.
It used to be PAX Prime.
That's the name.
But they didn't want to give it like PAX supremacy. So they just made it's like East, West, North, and whatever.
But yeah, you know, hopefully next year we'll be accepted for a Talking Simpsons thing. Though, of course, that did free me up so I could go to a pro wrestling show in Chicago, which I will be doing. But I wish I'm there in spirit. I wish I was there. If we had a Talking Simpsons thing there, I would love to have been on that panel, or at the very least attended as well. The Retronauts one. It sounds like you're going to have a whole lot of fun.
It's going to be great. I'm working on it now, and I can't wait. So please, if you're going to be at PAX, check it out. It's and I think it will. No, it will be live stream. We're in the big theater.
Oh, that's
so
awesome!
I don't know the details, but if you go to PAX's Twitch account, they'll be live streaming all the panels that day. So if you tune in at the right time, you can find it.
And that's Sunday the 4th at 2 p.m. Pacific.
That's right, Pacific. The best time zone. Even though I grew up on the East Coast,
you've come to accept the Pacific's the best. I love the Pacific time zone. Means I can watch, like, say, a live wrestling show or the Oscars and just be like, hey, it's 8 o'clock. I have the rest of my night. It's over at 8. That's nice.
It means I've lived here for almost 12 years. Whenever I call my mom, she will always say, what time is it there?
Yes.
It's always so much fun for your parents to find out what time it is somewhere else.
And we saw Riff Tracks live together, too, as long as we're saying stuff we did together live.
Yes, Return of the Swamp Thing.
Mm-hmm, that was great.
I didn't know about that movie. And it was a kind of bad movie that I love. It's a bad movie that's trying to be funny, but it's worse because it doesn't know how to be funny.
Oh, God, yeah.
So they were kind of like doing their own like trauma style movie. And Heather Locklear was playing this like Bugs Bunny style character who was always like quipping and doing wisecracks. And she can't. That's out of her range, folks.
Mm-hmm, yeah,
she can be like a stone cold bitch on Melrose Place. She can't do the kind of things they want her to do in Swamp Thing. But she did have sex with that thing.
It's so funny to look at and just look at the guy in the Swamp Thing makeup and go like, boy, this probably sucks for this guy. And all those the terrible kid jokes. Yeah, Connor, our friend Colin Lestoka wrote on that, and they did a great job. I think my favorite joke was the awkwardness of them walking through the bayou, and then Swamp Thing says, you know, they say the unhappy souls of the slaves of the plantation still haunt this place. And then Heather Locklear replies like, I don't know how anybody could be unhappy living here. I was like, Jesus Christ.
That got a laugh even though there was no joke.
Yes, yeah.
To follow. I mean, there was a joke to follow, but that line got a big laugh because like, this is in this movie?
The riff that followed it was, well, I'm not going to start my dates anymore with my slave ghost story.
But yeah, that's the story of my entertainment for the past 3 weeks.
Well, I've had some fun as well in between all of our many podcast recordings. Recently, as far as video games, I've been playing a lot of Yakuza 0. I've never, I had not played it before. Of Yakuza games I've completed, it's really only 6 and 7. So now I'm going backwards. I played a bit of the others here and there. But 0, now it's fun to go backwards. And I hope, I feel like after this I beat it, I think I'll do Kiwami next just to keep going in timeline order. But yeah, Yakuza 0, I'm up to that chapter 5. It's a lot of fun.
It's great, yeah.
Yeah, and though also, speaking of drinking, this happens when I play Yakuza or watch The Sopranos. I see these cool, tough guys have their little whiskey glasses full of like whiskey neat on the rocks, and I'm like, I'll have that. And
can whiskey be neat on the rocks? I thought neat meant without ice.
Well, okay, then on the rocks.
But the whiskey can't be neat. Like, oh, this is really neat.
So then I'm like, oh, I'll have some whiskey on the rocks too. And you know, one night had a little too much. I was like, oh, time for a third glass. That wasn't
How much is going in your glass?
It's like a finger. It's like two fingers.
Are you using a jigger?
Yes, I use your jigger. Yes, I
thank
do.
You.
But no, thank you. But yes, I and I'll say too that Mrs. Hoover is right. Drambuie is delicious. I love it.
What do you mix that with?
Just straight Drambuie over ice. It's
tasty. It's got alcohol in it to begin with.
Drambuie, yeah. Drambuie is a whiskey liqueur from I believe Scotland. That it's like a certain whiskey mixed with herbs and spices and honey. And
what whiskey are you drinking?
I'm out of it now. I had Suntory though.
Okay.
Yeah, I was doing because I was like, oh, it's Japanese. I gotta have. So it's, I go between Suntory, some nice Suntory whiskey, or Drambuie. Yeah, it's really nice. Or sometimes I have a little Bailey's, I won't lie. Like, yeah, which that's more of a girly. I feel like a Yakuza would look down on me for drinking Bailey's.
The secret to being a tough guy is you really got to nurse that whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
That glass has got to last you at least 45 minutes.
Yeah, I'm not timing it well enough. It's more like 15 minutes I make that. You know, since we got Transformers coming up, I have Game Pass now. I saw a game I never really would have paid for, Transformers Battlegrounds. And it's like, basically it's kids XCOM. And I was feeling like playing a kids XCOM, full of Transformers stuff. And it was hardly like as challenging. I played it on normal difficulty and it was pretty easy. If you've beaten a recent XCOM game, you'll fly through this game pretty easy, but it was a lot of fun. I had a good time with it. It's a good 6 out of 10 game is what I'd call it. Like, it's a nice time. And it's full of Transformers references for the elderly, because it's like, this game clearly is made for kids.
Large print.
Well,
the audio is played very loud.
Well, in that, I mean that it's a Transformers game clearly made for kids, but every cutscene or so, well, cutscene is generous, dialogue sequence, they will say a line from the Transformers 1986 movie that is just like, well, there's no reason to say "ba weep grana weep ninny ba" unless you're trying to excite an old man playing a Transformers video game.
They're tossing their canes in the air right now.
Yeah. but if you got Game Pass, it's an easy 9 hours and also pretty easy achievements. I barely was trying and ended up with 900 out of 1,000. Also, I beat, husband and I did it together, beat TMNT Shredder's Revenge. Whole lot of fun. If you love the old Turtles games, this one captures it perfectly. So pretty, so gorgeous. Like, it, again, made for the over 40 crowd.
I'm waiting for a holiday sale. I think I'll play it once it's like $14.99.
Yeah, again, probably wouldn't have paid full price for it, but it's on Game Pass. This is turning into a Game Pass
commercial. You're stealing from creators, Henry. Right out of their pocket. You're no worse than David Zaslav.
No, the game.
Or John. I'm kidding. I'm sure
Microsoft is paying them fairly to be on Game Pass. And of course, you know, coming soon, but me and Bob got some early copies. Cowabunga collection. I followed up Shredder's Revenge with more TMNT classic. It really put me in the mood for some classic TMNT.
Yes, and if you're listening to this, regardless of where, the episode is out on Retronauts, the Cowabunga collection, is sponsored by Konami, which is why we got those exclusive copies.
Thank you, Konami. Yeah, thank you, Konami. It was seriously a lot of fun. It's not just we were paid to say it. And I'm Pikmin blooming it up a lot every week. Competing with Bob and Nina and other pals to see who can get the most steps in the weekly challenge.
I'm writing letters to them so they'll count my elliptical machine steps. That's like 10,000 a day, 10,000 every trip that I'm not getting. They're not being logged properly.
I know. It's not fair, but they want to know where you're walking to, Bob, so they can share that information with some dark party, I'm sure. But all right, as far as watching stuff, my number one movie with a bullet I saw this month, Dragon Ball Super Superhero. It rules. It is my favorite Dragon Ball thing I have seen in forever. And again, I just like other Turtle stuff and Transformer stuff, that's because it is aimed at older millennials very directly. The first joke of the movie is it has to do a flashback to explain the Red Ribbon Army to people who maybe don't remember that. And it says, it's the narrator says, some of you may be old enough to remember the Red Ribbon Army. And they did I was like, ha ha. But it's, here's what I love about it. I won't spoil stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It does all the things you think a Dragon Ball movie will do, which is there's new villains who appear. They beat the heroes for a little bit, and then the heroes make a comeback. But it is full of continuity winks for mega fans who, like, a character will say, here's this tiny one, Piccolo is bad at driving a spaceship, and then he says, sorry, I never got my license. A reference to one of the best episodes of DBZ there ever was. And also, like, you've seen the commercials, Piccolo and Gohan are central to this movie. Piccolo, I love Piccolo so much. And I saw that Broly movie, the last movie they did. They always do it where, like, Vegeta and Goku are the top. Like, they're always the best. They're always the main guy. Sometimes you don't want to see Goku and Vegeta save the day and be the central guys.
Happens a lot.
Superhero doesn't do that. Superhero is also, the last thing I love about it is I read that Akira Toriyama was more involved in this one than previous ones. It is funny. It is actually about being funny and jokes and comedy.
Hmm.
And it was so great to see it in a theater with people. And I saw it on IMAX as well around here. And people were laughing. Like, I was with an audience of fellow nerds who, when say that driver's license reference happens, I am cackling like, oh my God, other people are laughing too. And when the big fights happen, you're also hearing other people go like, oh shit, man. Yeah. Like it was great. See it. If you can see it in the theater, I would say do it.
It's the number one movie in America.
Yeah.
People are into it. I just recently got out of Dragon Ball because I was watching it for months. I was watching Dragon Ball, the original, from the beginning. I took a break at the beginning of an arc. Now I'm watching a lot of One Piece. So I'm more focused on the new One Piece movie that's out in Japan that will be coming here probably around the fall. And I will make my wife see it. She would not be opposed to it, but she actually knows nothing about One Piece.
Wow.
And actually, I am like 17 years behind on One Piece. So I know comparatively about the same as what's going on in current One Piece.
You know, the one I saw with you in the theater across the street also was very full of references, many that flew right over my head, but it was a real like anniversary style celebration.
Yeah,
it felt
that
like
movie, I think it was called Rampage.
Yeah.
That was also good in that it was it had a premise, but then it was like, you know what, have a bunch of cool fights and that's it. And the entire movie was just like really cool fights with no real story.
I also, you know, normally I am a subs over dub snob, but not with Dragon Ball. Like, the Dragon Ball voices in English, I have known them for so long that I actually do feel the magical nostalgia of watching them in this movie.
Yeah,
really great.
Dubs have grown on me a lot, especially with movies where animation is really the focus. And I really enjoyed the Howl's Moving Castle dub. It's Christian Bale as Howl before he was Batman. He was like the Christian Bale.
Man, and who's the lead actress in it? I forget.
Someone lady.
Oh, okay. All right. okay. So then also movies at home I watched. That Prey movie on Hulu, really good. Really good. If you're looking for just, it almost feels so small that it would be a TV movie or a TV show, but conceptually, it is a really cool idea of just predators have come to America or the Earth over the decades and centuries. This takes place in, I believe, Comanche Nation of, you know, early America. Well, America, but you know what I mean, the New World. And then a predator shows up, and how does the predator do against a Comanche warriors? Like, it's really interesting.
It does sound very neat.
Yeah, it's a good time.
Oh, wait, back to Hal really quick. Yes, yeah. Lauren Bacall is the Witch of the Waste. Oh,
thank you. Okay.
Blythe Danner is like the queen or whatever. Mm-hmm. And Billy Crystal is Calcifer, the little fire guy.
I remembered that.
Like,
yes,
feed me logs. Yes. I need to burn here. Hello.
He had to, you know, he added a couple jokes at him. Like, I remember hearing that, but
he grew on me when I at the beginning I was like, oh really, it's like Mike Sully walking around. Wait, is it Mike Sully? I'm thinking of the Simpsons.
Mike Wazowski.
I'm thinking of both the X-Files guy and the Simpsons showrunner. Yeah. Mike Sully. Mike Wazowski. I was like, this is some Mike Wazowski energy, but this is why you hire him.
Though, you know, as I recall, Miyazaki loved that Lauren Bacall was a voice in the movie.
Yes, yeah. Yes. But anyway, sorry you asked, so I wanted to let you know.
Oh, no, no. Thank you, Bob. And other movie I saw, The Rise of the TMNT movie, which just, if you're a Sakuga fan, watch it for the amazing animation. There's some really, really good action in it. Like, they went above and beyond with this Nickelodeon animated movie, which shockingly is not on Paramount Plus, but on Netflix.
Don't understand it.
Yeah. At least in the United States, that's the case. And then as far as other TV shows go, speaking of Paramount Plus, been watching a ton of that new Beavis and Butthead, just like Bob.
Yeah, yeah. I love that it's weekly. I have something to look forward to every week, mm-hmm. and it is so good. If you are skeptical, I was too. Even after the movie, I was like going into the first episode saying, please don't mess this up. It's all so good. It's true to the nature of the show and the character. Sorry to
interrupt
you.
No. It's really, really great. And you'll hear us, obviously, we're talking about Do the Universe, but I have a feeling in our Do the Universe podcast, you'll hear us talking about the TV show a bunch too. Also, speaking of things that are cool, I love that everything, as long as it's not on Netflix, is a weekly release now. That's how everything should fucking be. Like, that's how I'm watching She-Hulk. It's a good show. It's not just Marvel homework. I like it, but
we're all hypocrites because in 2013, we were like, oh, all of Orange is the New Black at once?
Yes. Yeah.
What a novel idea. yeah, and now we're all happy, and I don't blame myself.
No,
or you.
But yeah, I think the She-Hulk show is good. Some people don't love that she looks at the camera sometimes and goes like, yeah, well, she doesn't say like, uh-oh, but she is close to saying check please uh-oh. Type bits, but it's sort of supposed to be like a bad joke. Here's the thing. The showrunner of the show, Jennifer Gao, she is the creator of Pickle Rick. And this is a Rick and Morty ass show, like in good ways and bad, mostly good. And again, I love also the actress Tatiana Maslany, and She-Hulk number 3 from 1987 or 8 is one of the first comics I ever bought. And yes, it's because Spider-Man was on the cover, but it's Spider-Man and She-Hulk teaming up. I've been wanting to read see a She-Hulk show my whole life. You know, there's straight guys who like She-Hulk. There's gay guys who like She-Hulk. It's not mutually exclusive. And the show's been good so far. I've been enjoying it. Okay, then What We Do in the Shadows. Love, love, love that show. Still great, especially because my celebrity crush, Harvey Guillen, a.k.a. Guillermo on the show, he had some very, very, very good episodes, including one that was very heartfelt. And he published an article accompanying it about his own coming out process.
I did see that, yeah.
It was really great. And he's also a voice on the new season of the Harley Quinn show. Harvey voices Nightwing, and he's so good as Nightwing on that show. And I've been really enjoying that Harley Quinn show, but I never want to compliment it on Twitter now because it's like, hey, I know HBO Max is making all of my friends jobless, but you know, this Harley Quinn show is pretty good. Maybe you should sign up for HBO Max.
Thanks, HBO Max.
And the same goes for The Rehearsal, which that just finished its first season. It is really great. It's really, really great. If you like Nathan Fielder, this is the level up from Nathan for you. Like, it's that dang good. And so, yeah, I would definitely suggest The Rehearsal as well. And yes, of course, I'm watching wrestling all the time, and I'm about to go to AEW's big show, All In.
What's it called? Like,
All Out.
The Big Door? Wait, that was the other one.
The Forbidden Door was the one against the Japanese performers, which I chose not to go to because CM Punk was injured. Well, CM Punk isn't injured anymore, and so, and also my favorite guy, Kenny Omega, he's coming back too. And you know what? They're about to put out their video game, or they're finally showing off the AEW video game, which I'm crossing my fingers will be like the No Mercy virtual pro wrestling and WCW NWO revenge games of my childhood. It's all about reliving your childhood right now. That's what's the
was
the
it your childhood or was it the late 90s?
Look, when I say childhood, I do mean my 16th birthday party where we stayed up all night playing WCW NWO Revenge.
That's when you became a man.
Yeah. He has this for his 16th birthday party, Bob. All my pals come over. We stay up all night. We're either playing WCW NWO Revenge or we are watching Irresponsible Captain Tyler.
Oh.
Because I got the full box set as a birthday present.
I didn't watch that until like 2001 or something.
Man, no, we had a good time, but it was hard to, I was like, come on, guys, let's watch episode 7. Let's put in the next tape. And they're like, no, I want to play more wrestling. And I agreed with them, but.
What a good time.
Yeah, good times. And, oh, and finally, other live show I saw this month, Comedy Bang Bang Live at the Castor Theater. It's great. But it also just made me sad thinking about how the Castro Theater is in trouble. Save the Castro Theater from itself, folks. Support them online. Check out Save the Castro Theater if you're anybody who cares about movies.
Let's move on to Talking Simpsons comments. Saturdays of Thunder is up first, and Kat Hegberg says, I have a photo of my dad holding me as a baby in one arm and holding up a copy of Fatherhood in his opposite hand with a big grin on his face and complicated feelings about my dad aside. It always used to make me smile, but now it just seems sad and icky. I wonder how many other cherished family photos are now ruined in a similar manner.
Mm.
Yes, I mean, Bill Cosby made fools of us all.
He really did.
I'm just thinking of the thousands of hours I spent watching The Cosby Show.
Yes, yeah.
I could have saved all that time.
Oh, God. Or so many just Cosby-related things like that it was like fun and kitschy to talk about the, you know, Fat Albert stuff. And now it's like, nah, no fun. You can't talk about Fat Albert. He's what a horrible, horrible man.
Yes. And I like how the Simpsons have outlived all of these monsters.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice. It's nice.
Well, I mean, Cosby's still alive. I won't knock on wood.
Right. Yeah.
I refuse to.
Absolutely not. No, it's sad. It's sad. He's not in prison still. It's really too bad. But Joe Hodgson, also on the same episode, says, I'm often amused by the changing architecture of the Simpsons house and to a lesser degree, Springfield as a whole during these early seasons. I should probably listen to the commentary on this one to see if it's mentioned, but in all the interior garage shots in this episode, there's a random staircase to nowhere in the background. It looks like they may have accidentally swapped the basement background for the garage in places, or it was just something they didn't give any thought to, and someone felt that there should be stairs there. I suppose they missed an opportunity to retcon it when they had the episode last season, 2 seasons ago, that took place in the tiny crawl space above the garage that I'm pretty sure any future scenes set in the garage have not included any mystery set of stairs.
That set of stairs was there in Itchy and Scratchy and Marge. It's how Maggie was able to drop something on Homer.
Yes, yeah. That's the only reason the stairs are there for...
Oh, no, she hits him with the mallet.
It's for the mallet, for Maggie to crack the mallet on his head. So, yeah, the stairs are there for only that reason, but it is supposed to be the garage. Like, and clearly the background designer looked at the previous episode, and they also have like all his bookshelves there for all of his building stuff. Like, yeah. And as for that episode, that's the one that episode was like their Christmas one that year, and it really was just Algie noticed, what haven't we done a thing about lore for? And he noticed that there's a window over the garage that's been in the opening scene the entire time. He's like, okay, let's do something about the window over the garage.
We need a rumpus room episode immediately.
Yes, they haven't done, you know, before the window over the garage. Let's hear about that rumpus room some more.
We want to know. Moving on to Half Decent Proposal, I have curated 2 comments that show the different sides of John Lovitz. So Mike Mariano says, for my birthday years ago, my family and I went to a comedy club where John Lovitz was headlining. The 2 openers were bitter young men making angry jokes about their girlfriends, and the second guy singled out one of the few black audience members, and we all felt uncomfortable. This is Bob chiming in. It is such a gamble with openers. Like, you want to trust the headliner, but maybe he didn't choose them. And the last time I saw stand-up comedy, unfortunately, was like almost 4 years ago. We saw Brian Posehn in Vancouver, And I was like, I don't know who these guys are. They were fine. Mm-hmm. You don't know what you're walking into with openers.
Yeah, you know, I saw Mulaney here. That was the most recent stand-up I saw. And he had two pretty funny openers. Then I believe within a month, he surprised everybody with quite an opener.
Yes.
Dave Chappelle, which I certainly would not have been happy about. I would have been like, I didn't pay to, you know, if you want to pay to see Dave Chappelle, have a good time, you know, but I didn't want to.
That wasn't a value added to your to your nights. Moving on to the rest of Mike's comments. Then John Lovitz came out and did a routine that was almost entirely calling himself gay and calling Kevin Nealon gay. I can't say it was very good, but Lovitz's juvenile gay jokes were much better than the alternative. So again, folks, this seems to be, or was at least at one point, John Lovitz's only bit is calling you gay, calling his friends gay.
People think he's gay. Yeah. And then, I mean, that's probably why he did the Harvey Fierstein character as well. He's like, see, everybody calls me gay. Let's have more of these gay jokes. But I suppose compared to a bunch of angry nobodies who just go like, my fucking bitch girlfriend breaks up. Do you ever have that problem? Or, hey, that black guy, he's nodding. He knows what that black, what the black people do this or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's uncomfortable for sure. One other opener I went to when I saw Hannibal Buress like 4 years ago live, he had an opener who had some funny jokes about like Dragon Ball Z and watching Dragon Ball Z Stone. And I was like, ah, this guy's for me. That's cool. And then one of his final jokes was about how maybe you should be allowed to use the R word for mentally handicapped people. And he had a very complicated reasoning for it just to want to get away. I was like, man, I'm not a fan of this joke.
It sounds like a Louis C.K. bit, if anything.
Yeah, pretty much. This was before the Louis C.K. canceling, I should say. Yes, you also just have openers who are like, well, this is just like the with nuts version of a famous bit I'm hearing here, like a slightly variation on it. But, and also, John Lovitz is not funny, and he's not a comedian. Like, he's not, well, he is a funny actor. I'm not taking that away from him. He can be funny,
but he's not
a comedian.
He's not known as a stand-up.
Norman Benford, his John Lovitz story is, I saw John Lovitz live a week ago, and he still has excellent stage presence. His act was surprisingly political, but he stayed pretty much on the fence. He definitely leans left, but seems to cling to some antiquated views on the trans and gay community, but always backtracked to just be nice. All in all, a very funny evening, and he put on a great and lengthy show despite suffering from a painful-sounding cough the entire time. Ooh, boy.
So it sounds like John Lovitz is leaning left but also dying?
He could just have road COVID, as most comics kind of get. That's but no, I mean, that description also sounds like a comedian over 40 is likely to say, look, I love everybody, but pronouns, and then it just turns into them, they kind of hedge and go like, but hey, be nice to trans people, but I just don't know about all these pronouns. Like,
he's a comedian over 60, so
it exacerbates with age, like over 40, and then every year over 40 you are as a comedian, you'll do worse and worse jokes about not understanding trans people. Even if you're a gay comic, you will still say like, look, I'm gay, but what's with all these, like, oh, there's a third gender now? What's the non-binary? It's just like, God, chill out, old rich gay people.
We just need a critic reboot to save John Lovitz's life.
They should fake, that's the reality show, a fake critic reboot that's really about saving John Lovitz's life. And he thinks it's real, everybody else is an actor around them.
It's an intervention to get him to stop calling things gay. Moving on to Flaming Moe's, Pity Party says, although, thanks for helping me discover another joke in the episode despite having seen it dozens of times, Moe charging a nickel for the love tester means he needs to perform 200,000 tests to break even. By my rough math, that's like 550 people per day for a year.
That's really good.
So even 30 years later, that love tester is still, he still owes on it.
That he sets it to a nickel in 1990, it should be at least be a quarter. Yeah. That is a great joke. Yeah, that it makes it much more unprofitable than I realize. That's very funny.
I think I forgot to mention on that episode, if you go to the Musée Mécanique in San Francisco, it's like a giant, basically, airplane hangar full of vintage arcade machines. And when I say vintage, I mean going back to like the early 1900s and before. Whoa. And I swear, like 20% of the machines are some variety of love tester.
They're all love.
And they like spit out a little ticket with like your love horoscope and like your grip strength and everything. I mean, yeah, a lot of them are just like very, very cheap. But I was surprised to see what a burgeoning field love testing once was.
I shout out to regular in the Discord and on Twitter, Brian Horton. They shared with us the version. They had some dry ice they'd gotten in a package, and so they used it and their vintage Flaming Moe glass from Universal Studios to make a purple and alcoholic Flaming Moe in that glass to show it off to us. And I really appreciate
it. It looked great. Yeah, it looked good.
Yeah. But also on that episode, Oscar Cardoza says, for those who might not know the history, lean, purple drank, is a drink originated in Houston, which started off as cough syrup and liquor. Throughout the years, it basically became codeine, Sprite, and Jolly Ranchers. And in the 90s, it became really big in the hip-hop scene, especially due to Houston rapper DJ Screw. The effects made you slowed down and contributed to the creation of Chopped and Screwed style of music that DJ Screw popularized. This episode is always funny to me because basically Homer was essentially making lean, and that was a huge thing, but down here in Houston the hood already had that recipe. I appreciate that, Oscar, for expanding on the, you know, we just go like, well, yeah, cough syrup plus liquor is a whole thing, isn't it? I've heard about this in the news.
Some older boy told me.
Yeah.
The history of purple drink. I mean, when I was a teenager and friends of mine began robo-tripping, which is like chugging a bottle of Robitussin back when it had that active ingredient in it that made you go insane. I thought back to Flaming Moe's. I was like, oh, were they all robo-tripping? By the way, I never actually did that. It just seemed too disgusting a proposition.
You know, my friends never did that. Of the baddest of the boys in my friends, they did whippets. That was their thing.
That's what happens when weed is not legal. Yes, you get to all this other dangerous stuff. If we just had marijuana, we wouldn't be chugging bottles of like Dimetapp or whatever.
Yeah. But thank you, Oscar, for that story. And you know, as long as I'm promoting other people's shows too, our guest on the episode, Tim Kalpakis, him and his band, the Sloppy Boys, are going on tour. Unfortunately, they're coming to Oakland when me and Bob are like the weekend of September that we're out of town. We're both out of town and can't make it.
I choose to take that personally.
But they're also going to Vancouver as well. Sloppy Boys, look up Sloppy Boys tour, but they're in SoCal, SF, or Oakland, Vancouver, and I think like Seattle or Portland as well. So if you're around there and want to have a fun time with the Sloppy Boys, check it out.
And this next questions are for the Bart Wants What It Wants comments, rather. And the first one is from Jason Liu, who says, interesting to hear the gatekeeping used to identify foreigners exists elsewhere. Growing up in the Bay Area and around San Francisco, many natives here get bent out of shape when they hear San Fran or Frisco, to which I, as a native, say, who the hell cares? And as a lifetime fan of the Warriors, I remember a time, 80s, 90s, 2000s, when we used to be a joke to the entire NBA, when reaching the playoffs was an unfathomable accomplishment. Suffice it to say, the past decade has been a miracle. Thank goodness for Steph Curry. Mm-hmm. My own opinion here, I've been living in the Bay Area for a little over 11 years. I learned pretty quickly, nobody says San Fran, nobody says Frisco. It's just SF.
Yeah.
It's the quickest way to say that mouthful. And I guess I only get agitated when people assume I live in San Francisco, when it's like a completely different city, like across a body of water.
Yeah.
I mean, if you live outside, it might as well all be the same. And I understand why. I mean, I don't know like New York geography. I don't know Manhattan versus like Brooklyn or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I get a little testy. People are like, yeah, you live in San Francisco, right? And I'm like, no, it's a 25 minute train ride.
Yeah. It's very far and slightly less rent as well. Yeah. No, the only other thing I'd call it is the city, though. Also, like, it was years and years of me living here before. Like, nobody ever says, maybe I've heard somebody say San Fran. Nobody says Frisco. So I never even heard somebody say Frisco to be admonished that you don't say Frisco.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard Frisco spoken.
It was like 6 years into my living here, I think, that I heard somebody say to somebody, and you know another rule of San Francisco, you don't call it Frisco. And I was like, wow, I've I've never heard of Frisco or that rule before. So, yeah. And yeah, the Warriors, I'll be honest, I didn't know we had the Warriors basketball team here in this city until they started winning.
Yeah, you know? I didn't know either. When I moved here and saw Warriors stuff, I was like, what is that, the college here? And then when they won the championship, I'm like, oh, they're a real team. Okay, yeah. Okay.
Well, because it's called Golden State, so I was like, oh, State, so it's a college team, you know?
Well, yeah. You know, the Golden State killer really ruined that for everyone.
Oh, that's true, yeah. See, this, but this is also what happens, like, where I grew up, there was not an NBA team. NBA was not a big deal. Like, it was, Arkansas didn't have one. When I lived in Atlanta, there were the Hawks. I heard about them, and then I moved to Jacksonville. No NBA team either. Like, yeah. And I wasn't that into the Orlando Magic.
We had the Cavaliers and a little guy named LeBron
played
for them.
You mean LaChina? Right? No, no, no.
And that's like, after I stopped caring about basketball is when LeBron James played for the Cavs.
Right.
Well, he played for the Cavs, right?
Yeah, it was the Cavs. And then he abandoned them for the Heat and won the championships there, and then came back and won the gold for the Cavs. And then after doing that, he's like, see, I'm going to L.A. And he left again for the Lakers. So, yes, that's that. And I know this thanks to doing research for Space Jam podcast.
Oh, yeah, you're right. he briefly played with the Toon Stars.
The Toon Squad.
Toon Squad. Yeah, I knew it was bad.
If you don't know that LeBron left, goes to a bunch of different teams throughout his career, I'd say five to ten jokes in Space Jam New Legacy don't make any sense to you. also on the Bart Wads What It Wants, Bree Rhodey Mantha says, I can't believe I'm about to be this much of a pedant, but at the same time, I feel a duty to be a huge geek about this. It's inaccurate to say that the CN Tower is useless as a building. While it is a dorky tourist attraction, the structure itself has a very practical use. Its antenna, which is a very important part of Toronto broadcasting and communications history. More than 30 TV and radio stations are transmitted through that antenna. Because of its height and its proximity at the southernmost lowest point in the city, it ensures that people across the city get clear access to a lot of radio and TV. During my 10-plus years in Greektown, I could watch our major conventional stations, CBC, CTV, City and Global, with just my antenna and no cable package. Clear as a bell. I was always appreciative of it, but didn't realize just how great it was until I moved to another county in southern Ontario near Lake Erie and can't get a single conventional station, even the CBC, through my antenna.
Yeah, so, I did not have a function. I thought it was just like a Space Needle type structure.
Yeah, useless like the Space Needle is, but turns out it actually has real benefits to it, which that was cool.
You know, I think I'm going to Seattle soon. I think maybe this time will be the time I actually go in the Space Needle just to say I did it.
Mm-hmm, yeah, that I've been thinking about that more on in general trips I did, like, you know, I've been to Chicago a couple times now, and the last time I was in Chicago, I saw the Bean and got a photo of, or the Cloud Gate, it's officially called, and went to a couple things, but I didn't go to, I don't know what it's called now, but the Sears Tower. You know, when we were growing up, that was the tallest building in the world, you know, the tallest building in the world, the Sears Tower. It no longer is that, but I would like to still just see it. And so I'm finally, that's one of my planned things I'm going to be doing in Chicago when I head there at the end of this month.
I used to think I was too cool for touristy stuff, but now I've aged into thinking it's neat.
Yeah. Well, and you want to, well, also, you know, for podcasts, it helps of like, oh, we're talking about a city I've been to. I've seen that. You know, you don't want to be boring and be like, I didn't go anywhere. I didn't see stuff.
I've been in the needle.
Yeah.
let's move on to Beauty and the Beast for What a Cartoon Movie. And Harry Thornton says, an extra Cranium Command fact. This is Bob stepping in. One of the directors, I think both the directors, their first work was a Epcot thing called Cranium Command, in case you forget. Moving back to Harry's comment. Cranium Command, it was one of the earliest projects that future Pixar director Pete Docter worked on after CalArts, and the ride's premise did help inspire his film Inside Out. Docter's also been pitched an Inside Out Epcot ride multiple times, but he has refused to do this since it had replaced Journey into Imagination with Figment. Despite the poor reputation of it as an inferior version of the original Journey into Imagination, he still wants Disney to keep the Figment character around as he's a huge fan of him and would hate to see his own creations overwrite a character he loves.
Well, it's just a matter of time like that. I never got to ride real Journey into Imagination. I did ride shitty current Journey, or like 6 years ago, Journey into Imagination with Figment. It sucks. I love that the Figment character is this wacky 80s goofball voiced by Billy Barty, but he's not. The ride sucks, and I love Eric Idle too, and I like hearing Eric Idle sing, but yeah, I'd honestly empty that shit out, give Figment, either make it a new Figment ride or just have Figment hanging out with the Inside Out characters, you know, and instead you just have the Inside Out emotional merry-go-round or something. No, it's not the merry-go-round, but there's something in Pixar Pier that's branded Inside Out. It's bumper cars, I think.
I think it is, yeah. Some like pier carnival style thing.
You can also get anger hot dogs, like red hot angry hot dogs based on the angry character from it.
I enjoy the yellow snow because you can pretend you're eating piss while you're at Disney.
That's right. Nina Matsumoto.
Hey, I love her.
Hey, she's great. A very accomplished artist. She says, "My first viewing of this film was much like Bob's. It was rolled into classroom and played on VHS, except it was at Japanese school, so I saw the JP dubbed version the first, though we didn't get through all of it. I'm actually not a fan of how Disney songs translate. Japanese uses more syllables than English, so they either have to simplify the line significantly, thereby losing some nuances, or cram in a lot of words sung really fast. And I think the result sounds awkward. By the way, 'Be My Guest' in Japanese is sung as Yokuso, which I got. Yes. Oh, and an important Simpsons correction. That's not Angela Lansbury / Mrs. Potts in See My Vest, but the nanny from 101 Dalmatians. That's true. It is designed. She's got me there. It is designed based on the nanny from 101 Dalmatians.
Which I've never seen, so I didn't catch that. Yeah,
that'll be a classic. You know, until I was four, we had a Dalmatian pet, a dog. And so I, of course, loved 101 Dalmatians as a kid. But I appreciate Nina for correcting that one. Thank
and,
you.
And Yokuso just means hello, welcome.
Yeah, which, you know, be my guest, be our guest. That makes sense.
It should be ear shy.
It should be, well, it should just be Lumiere screaming.
Yes, as soon as Belle enters. I like that. Yeah. It's very nice. Let's move on to Smiling Friends, the episode Enchanted Forest. And Bradley Winton says, "Gonna be that Aussie, but it's pronounced Melbourne and not Melbourne. And if you really want to be Aussie about it, it's Melbourne." Also, the first time I heard of Michael Cusack was his animation, Damo and Darren, which I thoroughly recommend if you enjoyed Bushworld. It's probably the most accurate representation of Bogans in Australia. I know you don't want to be a Bogan. Mm-hmm. And yes, Melbourne is pretty open to giving lots of money to the arts. It's why Marvel uses a lot of VFX studios from there. Anyway, I absolutely agree with you on how this show really is a show for my generation who grew up on Newgrounds Flash animations, but now with a lot less racism.
Yes. Yeah, that's an important distinction. And I'm glad an Aussie came in here with their knowledge of Melbourne to help us with that. It's also funny timing. That episode, you know, is chosen by our premium patron a week after it came out. Then surprise, Smiling Friends in Brazil, like they go to Brazil. That was so funny.
Yes,
that
I don't want to really spoil good. It for anybody. It's on the great network HBO Max. Yes. Pay them money now to watch it.
Yeah. I'm sure you could also find it on, if you just search the word, even though Kiss Tunes doesn't exist anymore, if you just search the name of a series in Kiss Tunes, you'll find a very pop-up riddled website, I'm sure, that will show you it. Also on that one, Ben Youngin says, Bob, the Lord of the Rings is too long. Also, Bob, The Count of Monte Cristo is my favorite book. Count of Monte Cristo is so long that I am currently 74% through the audiobook, and there are 15 hours remaining. Now, I did look up the word counts, and Dumas is still shorter than the three Lord of the Rings books combined, but given how much of Tolkien's song, appendices, blibbity blue, we skip or skim, that 100,000 words is probably going to go by quickly. But all kidding aside, thanks for the pod, boys.
So. Now, you're being very disingenuous, Ben, when you're making this argument, because I will say The Count of Monte Cristo originally published serialized. So every chapter is a very digestible little chunklet with a great cliffhanger. And that's why I was able to keep going. I find Lord of the Rings very, very long and tedious. Mm. And that's just me. That's not the kind of writing I prefer. That's why I like Count of Monte Cristo.
So the Count of Monte Cristo is more like reading, you know, like every Dragon Ball chapter at once, just all in one big book.
Basically,
serialized thing squished
down. Yeah, like he I was going to make the joke before you said this, but he was writing anime.
Right.
Like he was kind of writing pop culture trash, but now it's like beloved literature because it aged.
No, I mean, Lord of the Rings, I think, is a much denser, slower book than Count of Monte Cristo, would bet. Yeah, even though it was written relatively more recently than it. Yeah.
And Count of Monte Cristo is all about character and plot action. I don't think Lord of the Rings is really as concerned with those elements. And that's what I like in... I don't like world building. It just seems too easy to me.
Characters are, they're really just along for the ride of a just showing. And the plot, it's really just about traveling to places and hearing poems about other things. Like, that's... I was just thinking about this recently because I watched Fellowship of the Ring again. But, like, the story had always been, how do you do... the actual like meeting of the ring, because it is so, it's just like 17 guys at a town meeting going like, well, I think the ring should be this. But they make it interesting in the movie.
It's like reading the minutes like your city council meeting. He's going to be popular no matter what I say, but I'm not. I like The Hobbit a lot. I don't like the Lord of the Rings books, and I have tried to read them, and I've got like 2 degrees in book reading.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, you know, now the Lord of the Rings have been embraced by the Embracer Group.
Right.
Isn't that nuts that it just like. I would have thought Amazon would get it because they're about to put out the whole $1 billion TV show of it. But Jesus.
If they acquire you, the terminology you should use is they have been embraced to a permanent end.
They just did it for the Crystal Dynamics and all the Eidos Montreal stuff.
They keep announcing things. Yeah.
It's
will they embrace next?
Will it be you?
We will remain independent, I swear.
Oh, yes.
Yes. unless the paycheck is very big, and then you'll never hear from me again.
If it's $100 million like Mr. Burns gets offered by the Germans, we will do the woohoo, woohoo dance.
Yes. Yeah. And then we'll say, oh, the Swedish are mad at me.
Ooh, the Swedish.
We mock the Swedish on our podcast. Let's move on to Talkie Future. Drama, Godfellas, and Alex says, something I only now noticed about the ending. God does save the monks. By Bender learning that you can't count on God for Jack, Bender sets out to rescue the monks. Had Bender not learned the lesson from God, the trio might have left them for dead. The final line of God repeating that when you do things right, people won't be sure you've done anything at all, isn't just them reiterating the line, but reinforcing it with Bender's action. Now, I agree with you, Alex. I think that is a reading, but I don't think they designed the episode to have a distinct singular reading.
Well, again, it could also just be a super advanced computer that collided with God, who just thinks this stuff the whole time, you know? I like that they leave it nice and vague, but yeah, I could totally see that. And man, again, what a gorgeous episode that was. That was such a good one. Sean Riley also says about that episode, one of my all-time favorite episodes. I love how it has a secret physics thought experiment in it. My interpretation, I am a scientist but not a physicist, is that there isn't really a top speed for a self-propelling spacecraft in a vacuum. And since Bender isn't accelerating initially, the Planet Express ship would catch up to him eventually. But he actually kind of screws up his chances of being found by decelerating by throwing the swag. So they would have spaceballs right past them. Ah, right, when they're plaid and go right past them, yeah.
I think they point out the issues with the physics on the commentary, all these nerds.
Yeah, yeah. They can't not. I mean, they're full of PhDs around that room. Like, that was I'll tease that interview coming up, guys. We learned about the funny story of the nerdy way they use calculation to figure out how something is a moon or not.
Yes.
In the old Futurama offices.
It's very important. Yeah. Coming up next, Talking of the Hill Junkie Business, the bad episode. Guess what? Next, this coming one is very, very funny. Mm-hmm. Not like this one at all. I don't think I said that. The next September's episode is Life in the Fast Lane Bobby Saga, where he gets a job.
Oh, yes, yeah. And future stock for Futurama.
Yes.
Yeah.
So delete your comment. You just left it. You said you didn't mention the episodes. We just did. Moving on to Junkie Business. Very, very quick comment from Sean Riley, who says, I don't know if this was intentional, but Twig Boy is basically synonymous with Straw Man. And that's... it could be intentional. I like that as a secret joke by Greg Daniels, by letting Mike Judge do these stories, but then let's name him Twig Boy. Wouldn't that be funny? But then he's like, ha ha ha, I'm pointing out it's actually a straw man for your argument.
I want to believe that. I could see Greg Daniels being that funny to be like, you know what, if we're going to just make a straw man, let's call him Twig Boy. Like, it's because, you know, obviously, since our entire lives are arguing on the internet all the time, everybody knows what a straw man is now, but yes. It was less famous of a phrase back then. So I like that, Sean. That's a good one. And finally, our last comment on the episode for the not great episode, Junkie Business. Nicholas Friedrich says, just a comment on carpal tunnels syndrome. While it has been the go-to example of a white-collar disability, and people have been wrongly mocked for having it, it grew in prominence during the labor movement as a disability of people working in meatpacking, as demonstrated in the song Carpal Tunnel by John O'Connor. So while no one should be mocked for a disability they have, this one is by no means exclusive to office workers. And wow, that's I did not know that. That's really, I mean, yeah, carpal tunnel is... It's mocked as like, oh, that's you got that from using your mouse too much. Boo fucking who, you know.
Oh, you type too many letters.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I mean, work is work. And yeah. Henry and I can say, like, we have a luxury nerd job. We're very, very lucky. Mm. But when we do two podcasts in a day, we're done. All the energy is expended. Yeah. And it's like we dug 30 ditches our brains.
Yeah, with our brains. Yeah, no, we are better than a ditch digger. No. Bob's right, though. Work is work, and you shouldn't
except
use examples.
If you're a manager.
Okay, sure.
There you go.
Yeah, okay, if you're in management, you're scum. You're not working. But if you're not management, work is work, and I guess our proletariat message is the, like, don't use other examples of work to denigrate another person who works. Of like, same with, certainly in the online spaces, I've seen people say, like, oh, these baristas are unionizing, oh, hard work, tell that to a ditch digger. Like, fuck off. Like, and then on top of that, with Joe Biden's better than expected but not good enough college credit stuff, you've been seeing a lot of conservatives say, like, oh, this is an insult to people who really work, not people who went to college. Yeah. It's sad.
Yeah. By the way, I'm happy about that. The making people mad that are, yes, awful, and also possibly getting $10,000 back.
Yeah. No. It's you could always do more.
Yes.
Democrat,
yes,
could always do more. But it also, yeah, I hate, you know, you do have to hand it to Biden.
Yes.
He really actually did a thing that pissed off Republicans, and they have a great comeback to it. That, to see the White House account, this is really dating this at the time when we recorded, but to see the White House account do the cool thing that online leftists were saying about, like, just quote tweeting a critic of it with the amount of money they got in PPP loans, yeah, from the government. It's like, that's the perfect dunk. It really is.
And all the hypocrites, like, took out the biggest loans that were all forgiven.
Yes.
For podcasting.
I know, for podcasting. Yeah. To hear it reported by our pals on Chapo Trap House, of, like, Prager University, like, the most useless nothing, which also is just run on free fucking handouts from the Koch brothers, or singular Koch, I guess, now. One of them is thankfully dead.
Too bad.
Yeah, but that they needed, like, oh, PPP loans for what? You think they actually employ an editor at PragerU? Like, no way. I bet some, like, 20-year-old college Republican lackey is probably editing that for college credit. They're not paying an editor.
They weren't a small business, and also they shouldn't exist.
Yeah, they also shouldn't exist. No, no. but
yes, yeah. I'm actually happy about the student loan forgiveness because this is, I guess, news. As of this month, I paid off all my student loans.
Woo! Congrats.
And it was a lot. It was not quite six figures, although it was pretty close. And it took about 13 years, and I was paying a lot towards the end just to get it off my back. But I stand to inherit from Uncle Brandon $10,000.
Nice. Hey,
yeah, maybe, good. Maybe. Let's see what happens. But so far, like I said on Twitter, and we're extending this too long, I apologize. But like I said on Twitter, I want to go back in time to 2008 and tell myself, A, Joe Biden is president. B, he's less conservative than Obama.
Yes.
And I still don't understand that.
No, it really doesn't make sense at all. I mean, yeah, I feel like if people had floated this idea during the Obama administration, and they did, they would have been told, like, well, that's not serious. What you got? We have to be fiscally responsible, blah, blah, blah. All the crap you always heard. Like, it does feel like perhaps say maybe Bernie Sanders had something to do with this. His popularity, he mainstreamed some more ideas that weren't getting much attention.
Yes, but, as we like to say on this podcast, bullying always works, yes. Especially when you bully politicians.
Yeah, and Brandon actually listened to the bullying, and yes. I do. We both thank Brandon. Yes, he did do this.
We'll do a sincere let's go, Brandon.
Yeah, let's go, Brandon.
Yeah. But yeah, that was Talk to the Audience. Thanks for listening, folks. We have a fun month coming up in September. Again, we're covering Beavis and Butthead Do the Universe on What a Cartoon Movie. We have new episodes of Talking Futurama and Talking of the Hill. Labor Day week, and that's on Patreon, and the week after that on the free feed. We're doing two interviews instead of one new Talking Simpsons. And I forgot to mention, little hint here, there is another special episode coming in September as well you won't see coming. And I swear we might be the only people online to ever cover this subject in as much detail as we did on a podcast we already recorded.
Yep. Yeah. It's a really good one. I think you folks are really going to like it. And yeah. And don't forget, it's a real Henry content month this month, with Garfield and Friends followed by Transformers the movie, which, hey, thumbs up or thumbs down on the poll. Sure, you've got the touch, folks. Vote how you want, but you know what, honestly, if it loses, I'll just do it the next month, guys. It'll be the next poll I get to pick.
You're gonna watch it anyways. Yeah. Don't worry.
No, I think you guys are gonna like it. It'll be good, but it's up to you to vote.
Yes. Thanks so much for listening, folks. We'll see you again next month for another episode of Talk to the Audience, and we'll see you then.
Infotainment.